15 hours, Greenwich Mean Time.
BBC World Service presents Radio Newsreel. In this edition, three young Irish people face 25-year jail sentences for conspiring to murder the Northern Ireland Secretary, Mr. Tom King. Arab League objections to a British government minister's plan to attend a tourism conference in Jerusalem. The Hungarian Prime Minister says he'll resign next month, but stay on as Communist Party leader. And the Indian government tries to persuade thousands of protesting farmers to end a four-day demonstration in Delhi. Three people from the Irish Republic have been sentenced to 25 years in prison after being found guilty of conspiracy to murder the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Mr. Tom King, and others. The judge delivering the sentences at Winchester Crown Court in the south of England said they were terrorists intent on terrible crimes. David Smeaton was at the court.
Mr. Justice Swinton Thomas told Finbar Cullen, John McCann and Martina Shanahan that they'd planned the death of Mr. King and other prominent people. He did not accept, he said, defence pleas that their crimes were on the margin of criminality. Defence counsel had pleaded that the three had only been less important elements in the overall conspiracy to murder. The judge told the three, "These are terrible crimes. You've been convicted as terrorists intent on terrorist crimes. You intended the lives of other human beings to be brought to an end. You are entitled to political views, but you are not entitled to plot to kill other people. If your lives are ruined, you have brought it on yourselves. Terrorists who plan murder are not often caught, and when they are, it is for the court to reflect public horror." Finally, he said to them, "These are dreadful crimes, and while I do not propose to give you a life sentence, I find it impossible to differentiate between the three of you, and I sentence each of you to 25 years on each count to run concurrently. Let them go down," he said.
David Smeaton at Winchester Crown Court. The Arab League, which represents 22 countries, has protested to Britain about the participation of one of its ministers in a tourism conference beginning in Jerusalem tomorrow. A British embassy representative was summoned to the League's headquarters in Tunis to hear of the organisation's indignation. And the League has hinted of a possible Arab boycott of British tourist companies. From Tunis, David Bamford reports.
The Arab League protest is accompanied by the publication of advertisements in British national newspapers today in which the League warns of the consequences if the tourism conference goes ahead. The advertisements criticise the Association of British Tourist Agencies, ABTA, for choosing Jerusalem as the venue for its annual meeting, despite its position as what they say as a city under foreign occupation. The League warns that Arab states will feel compelled to take appropriate measures, including a boycott of British tourist companies. The Arab League said from its headquarters in Tunis that its anger has been increased with information that a British government minister will be taking part. A British embassy official in Tunis has been summoned to the Arab League headquarters to be told of what a League communique called the Arab world's indignation. The communique said the presence of the tourism minister, Mr. John Lee, represented a provocation against the Arab and Islamic world and was an offence to Arab sentiment.
David Bamford in Tunis. A spokesman for the Foreign Office in London said the fact that Mr. Lee will attend the meeting in no way implies a change in the British government's policy towards Jerusalem. As far as Britain is concerned, the status of Jerusalem is undecided, he said, and parts of the city are under foreign occupation. With the British Prime Minister, Mrs. Thatcher, and her Foreign Secretary, Sir Geoffrey Howe, both unhappy with the idea of a human rights conference in Moscow, some British commentators are asking if the government's earlier enthusiasm for Mr. Gorbachev is beginning to wane. The question of a human rights gathering in 1991 is now the main issue at European security talks in Vienna, which East and West and the neutral states of Europe hope will be concluded soon. Our diplomatic correspondent, Mark Brain, examines the issues.
France, West Germany and Italy are all now publicly committed to the principle of a human rights conference in Moscow in 1991. Britain, along with the United States, Canada and Portugal, is rather more sceptical. Mrs. Thatcher, in a speech last night, said Britain would only attend such a gathering once Moscow had actually implemented the human rights clauses of the 1975 Helsinki Accords. The Foreign Secretary, Sir Geoffrey Howe, speaking just hours earlier, said that before the West could agree to a conference in Moscow, there must be concrete and lasting improvements in Soviet performance, for example, in emigration, the release of political prisoners, and religious freedom. Although she's long been on record as describing Mr. Gorbachev as a man with whom she can do business, Mrs. Thatcher clearly feels that although he has changed much in the Soviet Union, he has not yet altered the foundations of a repressive system. And although the Foreign Office here is denying there are any serious differences with Britain's Western partners, the Prime Minister does evidently feel that some countries are tending towards excessive and as yet unjustified enthusiasm for what Mr. Gorbachev has already achieved. Mrs. Thatcher's phrasing about the contentious Moscow conference would appear to leave little space for compromise, but in the Foreign Office, officials hint that there is room for manoeuvre. I understand that Soviet negotiators at the Vienna Security Gathering have for their part taken a tough stand on a Moscow human rights conference, setting it up as a condition for Soviet acceptance of all the other follow-up conferences already planned for the next 4 years, and not just on the humanitarian sphere. The British position, said one official, was not one of cast-iron preconditions. There might be some diplomatic way of accepting a Moscow meeting while protecting Western positions, but Soviet concessions so far were not enough. Mark Brain, BBC, London.
The Hungarian party leader, Mr. Károly Gross, has announced he will resign from his other job, that of Prime Minister. Mr. Gross began implementing severe economic policies after becoming Prime Minister 16 months ago. Later, he took on the more important job of party leader when a special conference ousted the veteran János Kádár in May, and he'd always said he would not keep on the two jobs indefinitely. Sally Ekroyd in Budapest looks at where the Hungarian government goes from here.
The Prime Minister had been put forward at the moment, but the list would be narrowed to one by the time the Central Committee met. It's thought the front-runner at present is the party's economic policy secretary, Mr. Miklós Németh. He's already enjoyed a meteoric rise in the party, being appointed to the Politburo in May at the age of 40, after less than a year on the Central Committee. But there's also speculation that a more conservative candidate, the party ideology secretary, Mr. János Berets, may be a contender. In a long interview in the government daily newspaper today, Mr. Gross said he was dissatisfied with what had been done in his 16 months as Prime Minister, although much had been achieved. And in a rare allusion to disunity among the party leadership, he said it wasn't ideology that posed the problem, but personalities. And he warned that personal ambition mustn't be allowed to take precedence over work towards common goals. He denied there was any power struggle going on, but said order and discipline must be made more stable and the hierarchy must be accepted.
Sally Ekroyd in Budapest. The Indian government is continuing negotiations to persuade thousands of farmers to leave the centre of the capital, Delhi, where they have been camped out for 4 days. The presence of the farmers, who are demanding more financial assistance from the government, is threatening to disrupt a big rally planned for Monday by the ruling Congress Party, as Justin Webb reports from Delhi.
The presence of tens of thousands of farmers in the centre of Delhi was at first just a nuisance for the government, but it's now become a serious political problem. The farmers, who arrived 4 days ago, were expected to hold a one-day rally and then to leave. But they decided to remain in Delhi until their demands for a better price for their produce and lower electricity charges were met. 2 years of drought, followed by this year's floods, they said, had seriously damaged their livelihood, and the government had not done enough to help. The farmers have been sleeping in the open next to their tractors and carts in conditions which they claim are no worse than those at home. Today, government ministers have renewed their efforts to try to find a way of persuading the farmers to leave before Monday, when a million supporters of the Congress Party joined when the Congress supporters arrived. The government then is faced with three options. The first, to cancel the Congress rally, which would be seen as a major political embarrassment for Mr. Gandhi. The second, to give in to the demands of the farmers, which might be seen as a sign of weakness in the face of extra-parliamentary pressure. Or the third, to allow the rally to go ahead, in spite of the farmers' presence, and hope that the two groups respect each other's right to demonstrate.
Justin Webb in Delhi. Defence ministers of the North Atlantic Alliance who have been meeting in the Netherlands have managed to avoid a damaging public split over the modernisation of land-based short-range nuclear weapons in Europe. Before the NATO meeting, the Belgian government said it would not endorse an official report calling for modernisation of the weapons. But Paul Reynolds, who attended the meeting near The Hague, says the NATO countries finally achieved a united front.
NATO should modernise or upgrade its short-range nuclear weapons in Europe, especially at a time when the whole balance of forces in Europe is going to be discussed with the Soviet Union. The Belgians, perhaps speaking implicitly on behalf of other worried governments such as the West German and the Danish, said that quick decisions would be premature. The meeting got round any difficulties by agreeing that no decisions were needed at this stage anyway, and that everyone accepted that the process should go forward step by step. The British minister, Mr. George Younger, was one of those pressing hardest for decisions to be taken when necessary, probably, he said, next year.
We've just had an enormous success by forcing Warsaw Pact to have the INF Treaty. We want to reduce the nuclear stockpile, but of course we have to keep up to date the weapons that we have. There is no sense in the world in having weapons that are out of date.
That was the British Secretary talking to Paul Reynolds at the NATO meeting near The Hague. And finally, some news about us. Our programme style is changing. Here to explain is our English output editor, James Edwards.
Radio Newsreel, like many other World Service news programmes, is changing this weekend to a new style. You'll still be hearing the voices of our correspondents reporting from around the world, but they'll be set in a new frame. This is how it'll begin. That's our new signature music, composed by Richard Attree of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop, who's been watching Radio Newsreel as it takes shape.
What interested me most about what actually happens here, having just watched a programme go out, is the contrast between this very high-tech newsroom and as soon as the previous signature tune is played, that rather old, scratchy sound of Imperial Echoes. And what I was trying to do was trying to bring the two together. After all, the news is produced with computers and in a very up-to-date way nowadays. I think with these pieces of music that are very short, that you sort of live with from day to day, you actually find you have to give them a bit of time to soak in, to become part of your life.
Our new style programme, called Just Newsreel, starts on Saturday. We hope you like it.
That was James Edwards, and that was the last edition of the Old Style Radio Newsreel. From midnight tonight, you'll be able to hear our new newsreel programme. So this is Sandy Walsh saying goodbye, along with our old companions, the Royal Air Force Band, conducted by Squadron Leader R.P. O'Donnell, and Imperial Echoes.